Dan, welcome back. Michael Roll and scientist Ron Pearson. We're talking about the mechanics and some of the remarkable things that have proven in repeatable settings that there is everlasting life, consciousness, whatever you want to call it, many terms. But it looks to be something that generates from a field that may, in fact, Ron Pearson, be as much of the universe or more than the part which we can see, correct?
Yes.
Your eye ether field, constantly growing, constantly being, and it's a filament field, of it's an intelligent field, may be the whole, we call it a background medium, but it may be the medium upon which this universe that we see is spawned, and what we see may be just a trifle of the whole thing. We don't know, but it's a marvelous thing to contemplate.
If anyone wants to take it a bit further, I did have an article published in one of your journals in 97, Temple University, Center for Frontier Sciences, in a journal called Frontier Perspectives, which people might like to get hold of.
Now, you also went to speak a very prestigious event in Russia.
Oh, yes.
Tell us about that. You actually were given an invitation by someone. It was a very special set of circumstances. The Russians, of course, are really pushing the whole frontiers of this psi paranormal world. They haven't ever stopped, from my understanding and my inside information.
On this area, yes. Yes, it was a scientist in England, Dr. Louis Essen, who wrote to me and said it's impossible to get anything published in the West, which is an alternative to relativity, and or even to criticize relativity. And he'd been given an invitation to a conference in Russia in 1991. But he said in his letter that he was 81 years old and was too weak to go, and suggested I go in his place to give my theory there, which I did. He was a very famous man. He only died 2 years ago. He was the inventor of the cesium beam atomic clock, which is the world standard for accurate timekeeping. So I went along in his place, and
How were you received there?
Oh, very well indeed. A totally different atmosphere there. over here, the scientists tend to look down on engineers, at least if you're in England. But over there, we were treated as equals, which was very nice.
Indeed. All right. Let me ask some questions of Michael here from some of our listeners. If you want to call in, 1-800-876-4123, of course, is our phone number, 800-876-4123. This is from Craig. Hi, Jeff. This is the most important topic you could have on your show. Please ask your distinguished guests these questions. Number one, on a past program, one of Michael's guests said, everything happens for a reason. Is the future, therefore, set in stone, or through free will can we alter the future, and therefore it is really not predictable? Michael, you first.
Yes, I go along with free will, all the way with free will. When Helen Duncan materialized in front of me in 1983, I said this to her. It seems incredible that if the future's there, where does free will fit into this? And this was her answer. She says, Mike, we can see the overall picture better than you can, but if somebody uses their free will, all our plans can be scuppered. So that makes sense to me. They make plans in the etheric world the same as we make plans, but if somebody does something, they can change the plans. I think that makes sense, doesn't it?
I go along with that 100%.
Yes, you've got to have free will.
It is possible that long-term predictions could be correct as well, because what's happening there is that the etheric background itself can make plans, and it has great power, so it can ensure that certain of those plans will come to be. So people who read the future from may be able to just read the background intentions.
Interesting, interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
And predicting the future. I mean, take the terrible slave trade where they took people off the coast of Africa and shipped them across to the
Well, we have to be historically accurate. Their own people sold them off as slaves to willing buyers, so it was a two-part issue.
Yeah, yes, it's definitely a two-part business. But if a prediction at the time, anybody could make it, they could say, I think we're building up big trouble for ourselves in the future here.
So you
can look into the future like that. When you can see what's happening now and think there's going to be trouble in the future if we do this.
Sure. Well, that some people can call that karma, whatever you want to call it. What about the... Now, we are not the only life form in the universe. The souls that come from the aether, as Ron calls it, that background field, that medium, which may be actually the foreground, we may be the background, can project, I guess, human souls, what we would call human souls, into other life forms? Is that your view, around the galaxy, around the universe? Can we pop up on other planets and other places?
Well, can I answer that one?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Answer that one, Ron. Yeah.
I think this is quite an important question. What the theory shows is that you should be there is a medium for communication along these filaments, which is almost instantaneous, or absolutely instantaneous.
Mm-hmm.
And you should be able to reach any part of the universe instantly through this medium. The only reason that scientists say messages cannot travel faster than light is because they rely on Einstein's relativity theory, which prohibits anything, even a message, traveling faster than light.
Which shackles so much.
But once you dispense with relativity, then you haven't got this limitation.
Got it.
And also, it is possible for transport, instantaneous transport, to take place in the manner of the apoor. Now, we can't do the apoor ourselves, but there are frequent people frequently witness apoor. And in fact, I witness one myself about once every 3 months. So I know that the apoor happens.
It
appears from nowhere.
Ron, would you please explain that? Some people might have missed what you're saying, the apoor.
Apoor, yeah. Well, this happens very often with very psychic people. An object will suddenly appear from nowhere and land on the table.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't usually happen while you're watching it. It's when your head's turned away.
Mm-hmm.
You suddenly find something's appeared. It happens in seance rooms very frequently, but I witness them myself occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the explanation I would give for this is that everything, our matter system isn't as real as it looks. It's more like a semi-virtual reality, and it comprises a wave pattern on which the thing is built.
Mm-hmm.
What you have to do is to find a way of copying that wave pattern at one place, and then you read it out at another place, which you specify. And then the object will be recreated in a new place from the same pattern. In this way, it should be possible to transport instantaneously from one place to another.
Well, you see, we're back to Einstein's theory, which, is a ball and chain to all of this, because the speed of light, the theory is, once it is matched and exceeded, would allow time travel. But, of course, as remote viewers will say, there really is no time.
Well, that's a very difficult question, this business about whether time exists or not. If you try to dispense with time altogether, you can't do any mechanics. And, this is a question which I think is a little bit out of our reach.
Okay.
So it's best not to consider it. I do not personally think time travel is feasible. But certainly instantaneous.
Well, if there is no time, then it's not feasible. You see what I'm saying?
yes, but this question of whether time exists or not is a very moot point, and it's one I'd rather leave alone because.
Okay.
I can't, in fact, get to grips with that one.
But very after good. What, can I come in there?
Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, yeah, Ron, explain that Einstein's speed limit of light has been totally shattered by orthodox science, hasn't it?
Well, they've matched it. In fact, they've made it slow down. They've exceeded it in the lab and slowed it down. So it's
well, they say they've slowed it down.
That's what they say.
But the theory of gravity, which I come up with, gives the same experimental, satisfy the same experimental observations, but it gives us a totally different meaning. Instead of time slowing down, clocks run at a lower frequency simply because they're heavier.
Ah.
If you take an experiment, you can do it very easily. Try bouncing an object on a piece of elastic or on a spring, and it'll vibrate at a certain frequency. Then double the mass, and it vibrates more slowly.
Understand. Okay, very good. Stand by. We'll come right back. More questions. Send them into me, Internet. I'll pick them up. JR@Rentz.com, or give us a call, 800-876-4123. Wide open frontiers tonight, no limitations. Here's another question from Craig. Michael, one of the guests you brought on before, one of the women, asked her son who had died, her afterlife son, if he had met Jesus, and he responded, "Of course." What have you gleaned from your research about Jesus and his accessibility to folks who are over there?
Well, if Jesus is a hero to many people, he's a man the same as we are, and if I'm looking forward to meeting Thomas Paine when I go over, that would be my great reward, meeting the great philosopher Thomas Paine. People, I don't see why they shouldn't meet Jesus.
And it's all apparently instantly accessible and right there. It's all part of the same fabric. So, yes, that consciousness would be available according to what we are discussing tonight. Thomas Paine, one of America's greatest and largely, I hate to say it, overlooked here in the States. People know his name, but they don't study his writings and his works as they should.
Oh, well, we've now got a video circulating through the United States on Thomas Paine. It somehow crept past our senses in the BBC here in 1982. It's the most wonderful documentary I've ever seen in my life.
It's over in the UK now, you say?
Yeah, but it's also in America now.
Uh-huh.
If you log on to my website, you can actually buy it in America, the Thomas Paine video, an hour and a half, and my goodness, what a wonderful man.
All right, give me... Now, we've got Ron's website. Your website...
Well, that's my website as well.
You're still sharing, okay.
Well, yeah, Ron's come onto my website.
Oh, very good. Okay, I was momentarily thinking you had...
And then anybody can get this Thomas Paine video, and it'll change your lives completely when you see...
Wow.
The treatment this man was dealt to in his life is quite frightening.
Yeah, well...
He's been written out of our history books in Great Britain.
Yeah.
Even though he did more than any one man start the American Revolution and the French Revolution, he's been written out of our history books in Great Britain because he wrote The Age of Reason, saying what we're saying, that everything is natural and normal, not supernatural.
Mm-hmm. In the materializations that you have seen, what emotions have been displayed by the people who have been able to materialize in full body or near full body form? The basics?
Well, it's absolutely natural. That's what struck me more than anything when I took part in these experiments, Jeff. It's exactly the same as meeting you. They're so natural and normal. They talk to us exactly as I'm talking to you now. It's a two-way conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say I met Helen Duncan, we did the scientific exercise of making it sure it was Helen Duncan by getting her daughter to take part in one of these experiments.
Oh.
And the daughter spoke to her dead mother, Helen Duncan, for a whole hour, as like I'm talking to you now,
and you
answering all
this.
The questions, talking about their life on Earth. And this has all been reported in a magazine, how the mother and daughter were reunited.
You were there for that?
No, I wasn't there, but one of my friends set up this meeting, and it's all been reported in a magazine, which is on my website.
All right, what the big push is again now is to get one of these reunions, if you will, down on videotape or film, whatever.
And when we do, there will be nothing to stop internationally famous people fully materializing and being reunited with their loved ones. For example, I think the most ideal one would be the Princess of Wales, because just before she was killed, she went to see a medium. So she's on our wavelength, and she'll be as keen as we are now she's in the next world to let her boys know that she's still alive. And there's nothing to stop her. If we get a medium as good as Helen Duncan or Rita Gould that I worked with, the Princess of Wales could fully materialize, and our scientists would set it up that the Prince of Wales and the two boys take part in the experiment.
Imagine the courage for them to, if that happened, to come forward and publicly state it in their positions. The pressure on them would be enormous.
The Prince of Wales is on our side. He's up to date with all the work. He's been reading this subject all his life.
Excellent. Yeah, I've remembered that from her last visit.
Well, this is because of the work that Queen Victoria did.
Why were her diaries destroyed?
Well, as soon as Queen Victoria lost her husband, she was absolutely devastated, and it was in the Victorian area, as you know, and she ordered the finest medium in the country to come into the palace and make contact with Prince Albert, a chap called Lees. And he did so immediately, and she was so thrilled, Queen Victoria. She says, right, you've got to pack up and move into the palace with me so I can speak to my dead husband every day. And Lee said to her, there's no need for me to do that, ma'am, because I'm being told by the scientist in the next world that you have on your staff a medium who's even better than I am, John Brown, her gilly. That's why all this scandal about Queen Victoria blew up, because she was just locking herself away in a room with John Brown because he was a brilliant medium and he was able to contact Prince Albert. And she recorded all this, every meeting she had with John Brown and contacting a dead husband, Albert. She recorded in her diaries. And, of course, as soon as she died, the diaries were immediately destroyed. And I got this information from the Queen herself on television. To millions, she told this story. She was showing some members of Parliament around Buckingham Palace, and one of the MPs said, "Oh, isn't it wonderful to see Queen Victoria diaries? And in her own handwriting as well." And that's when the Queen said, no, that's not her handwriting, because her diaries were destroyed when she died because she had upset the establishment, and they were rewritten by Lady somebody or other. So it's all coming out. The truth is coming out now, and the Queen is even telling it herself.
All right. Stand by. I'll be right back. More questions for Michael Roll and Ron Pearson. I'm Jeff Rentz, and 800-876-4123 if you want to call. If you want to write, email, just jr@rentz.com. Okay, right back with Michael Roll and Ron Pearson talking about subatomic eternal life, which is quite accessible to more and more people now who are doing the research, doing the work. Here's another last question from Craig from Illinois. Traditional wedding vows state that we are married until death do us part. Do married people stay together in the afterlife? Is there a concept of male-female paired unions after death? Can two souls go back into the ether, and remain together, as it were? Ron Pearson, what about that possibility?
That's something I think I'd like to hand over to Michael to answer. It's not something I can deal with.
You don't have a mathematical form. You don't have a formula for that one yet.
No.
Okay.
Well, the thing that struck me, as I said, Jeff, is how natural everybody is, and it's exactly the same as we are. If you've got this wonderful bond of love, it can't be broken. When you go into the next world, we're met by our loved ones.
It is said that that is the strongest power in the universe.
Yeah, I agree with that. It really is fantastic. And we're all immediately reunited with our loved ones. When my father was dying, he turned to my mother and says, "Oh, you're quite right, Joe. I can see my mother and father at the bottom of my bed. They're waiting for me."
Really?
So we're welcomed over there. It's not a... not a strange place we go to. We're among friends as soon as we die. And that's where, if you loved your wife on Earth, why not? Well, of course you are reunited.
Right. All right. And perhaps have been together for a long time before in some
cases. Yes, we've come from the etheric world. We're only here for a very short time. That's the real world. The invisible part of the universe is the real world.
Go ahead. I follow you. How about reincarnation? How does that fit in with
that? Well, I asked one of the materialized people next to me, and I thought I'd get that to the bottom of that, because a lot of people are saying we only hear once, we don't have to come back. But others are saying we have to keep coming back. So I asked this chap sitting next to me from the next world, I said, what about reincarnation? He said, I'm sorry, I don't know, Mike. I honestly don't know if I have to come back or not. He hadn't come across it. Coming back. So I don't want to go into that too much. Let's get through to everybody that we survive first. Then we can make a careful study of whether we reincarnate later. So most people in the world don't know that we have the scientific proof of survival. So that's what I'm pushing first. Then we can open up a whole Pandora's box of all other angles to go off on, Jeff.
Right.
We can look into that later. A lot of work has been done on reincarnation. But that's something I'm not touching at the moment until we've got through to everybody.
Fair enough. Now, the one thing that I spend a lot of time on this program, with Brad Steiger especially, in warning people about is the Ouija board.
Oh, yeah.
That there are spirits that aren't necessarily of a high vibrational essence, who like to play games, who like to interfere, who are hanging around, whatever. And the Ouija board has long been a door opening to things that we cannot control in most cases. How do you see the Ouija board, and what would your counsel be to people who want to play with them?
I think that's very important. You must realize that there are an awful lot of rotten people on this earth as well as good people, and they all go into the next world. And you'll find if you do use a Ouija board, you can't ban people from using it, but you can warn them. That if you use a Ouija board, like a lot of people do, you can get through to your loved ones quite quickly very often because you're getting the code words coming back correctly. You're definitely in touch with your aunties and uncles. But suddenly the damn thing starts swearing at you, and you know that your uncle and auntie would never use swear words like that. So all that's happened is they've been pushed aside, and then the rotten elements closest to the Earth's vibrations can easily take over a Ouija board. So just be terribly careful of using a Ouija board. And if that happens, just break off immediately because you've just tuned into the wrong wavelength, so to speak.
Have you used them?
I've witnessed them being used. When I was in the Royal Navy, it got around the ship that I was a chap who's read the subject a bit, and they were using it in the stoker's mess. And they came and got me, and I went down there. And
really?
Goodness knows what they'd got through to. They'd got through to all the pirates on the Spanish Main, I think. The terrible things that were saying in this Ouija board, and it was tearing around the mess table. And I explained to them that you'd got through to some pretty rotten elements there. And they understood, and they just broke off.
Oh, funny. Here's a question from Catherine. My husband Chuck and I talked about his contacting me. We discussed a code. Does this mean that it could take up to or more than 10 years to hear from him? What would the time limit be? Would you ask your guest if he was constantly focusing attention on listening to his mother? Were you totally focused on your mom at the time? And it took 10 years.
Oh, no, because I didn't have to prove my mother was alive. I just said when she was dying, if you've got anything really important, let me know via a medium.
I see.
No, and that's what happened, you see. But other people want proof that their loved ones are still alive because they haven't read the subject like I have. So the only way they can do that at the moment, Jeff, is to contact a really good medium.
Mm-hmm.
Like the mediums that Professor Gary Schwartz is working with.
Right, all right.
But as you've given the warning, be terrible, terribly careful of people
trying to
make a fast buck out of people's grief.
And they do. There is a kid's version of Ouija boards now. Children's version.
Yeah, well, as long as you warn them to be very careful.
No, you don't warn them. You just don't get it for them.
You don't get it. But you can't force them not to, you see. But just if they're going to do it, you just warn them to be very, very careful.
There ought to be, it shouldn't be called a game, and there ought to be clear warnings on the packages, but we're not going to see that. When we come back, let me ask Ron Pearson to comment on the concept of making machines. We talked about maybe creating a device to allow people to talk to us from the other side easily. But what about a machine that could somehow change our vibrational essence into something that is not normal? Lower it, raise it, control it somehow. I'm not talking about killing people necessarily, but influencing them with a massive vibrational assault of one form or another. Let's see what Ron Pearson might have to say about mechanical manipulation of vibration. Ron Pearson, with all this genetic manipulation, DNA, game playing, advanced electronics, focusing on actually creating disease states in people through transmission of energies with certain signatures and all that. How are we going to survive the next 50 to 100 years, given that there are so many lousy people involved with some of these fields?
I think Ron's disappeared, Jeff.
Right. He has momentarily. We'll try and get him back. All right, Michael. Well, what about this? What about this thing of controlling people with electronics and altering their vibrational frequency?
Yes, I haven't got into that. It sounds terribly complicated and frightening to me, but I don't think that's going to be a problem, because you don't mess about with these people that I've met from the etheric world.
Well, I'm talking about us.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's going to affect the people in the etheric world, and
it could affect everybody.
It is, and I don't think they'll let it happen. I think
they might put a stop to it. Okay.
Yeah, a good example is Joan of Arc. I mean, we know for a fact that she was able to contact dead French patriots who told her how to get rid of the British. They told her when to where and strike at the British. And because that was so dramatic, the CIA and the KGB learned from that lesson, and they started employing mediums in the Cold War, as you know,
mm-hmm.
quite successfully. But I don't think that people in the etheric world will stand back and let anything big like that happen. They'll let people kill each other with axes and bows and arrows, but I think if you start really messing about, they're going to step in.
Ron, what about the idea of electronically building devices that can interfere with the vibrational sanity of the that background field and this field that we're living in right now, too?
I wonder if that was possible. I know that some Russian work's been done on interfering with minds by electronic propagation.
Oh,
but
yes, a lot
it's
of it,
possible
yes.
to interfere with another, for us to interfere in another world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't think we could do that.
Well, you have to. Time will. It'll be interesting. But I'm concerned, Ron, about science running amok. Quite frankly, we have a hint of what some of the dark black operations that are going on now might be heading for. But what we don't know is even more frightening. And where will we be in 10 or 20 years? We're talking about so many things.
I think that is a worry. One of the things that I would like to mention, I think they're wasting their time with this SETI, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence.
Yes.
Because they won't be trying to work. They're trying to look for extraterrestrial intelligence by radio waves, which would take thousands of years to reach us.
I don't understand it myself.
They're obviously not going to communicate with us on electromagnetic wavelengths, radios.
Right.
Because another channel of communication is available, which is almost instantaneous.
Yeah.
And they'll be using that one. They won't be using the... So they'll be waiting... They've wasted about 20 years looking already, and they'll continue to do so unless someone puts a stop to it.
Right. Michael, have some of the people who have... This is a question from Kelly. Who have come through mediums not spoken of Jesus... Do they all speak of him? How does it break down? Does it just depend upon who the person is?
Yes, I think if you're following Jesus, and not many people do now in England and Wales and Scotland here. It's only in Ireland that the religion is still going, really. And I know it is in the United States, of course.
Well, there's an article I ran on my website about that. A major church figure, a bishop, said that that religion is... just about finished the United Kingdom.
It's almost non-existent in England and Wales, certainly. But when we contact people in the next world, if they haven't been religionists on Earth, they're not religionists in the next world. So the question of religion doesn't come up at all. But if you look upon Jesus as a great philosopher, I don't see any problem with that. Mm-hmm. But as you know, the priest turned him into God, the creator of the universe, because they thought something supernatural had happened, understandably. So we can now mark the work of our ancestors.
All right.
But have him as a hero by all means, and what he was saying,
right.
A great deal of what he was saying has been proved correct. Right. That's the most important.
What about people that appear to be trapped here? That we always hear stories of, well, they're haunting, and if you tell them to go to the light, it's okay, and to go on their way. Is there some kind of, Ron Pearson, is there some kind of a middle, let's not call it purgatory, but some middle etheric level that people can get stuck on where they're half there and half here?
I've never come across that, luckily. You hear these shock stories, but whenever I've spoken to people from the next world, they always say that they're immediately reunited with their loved ones.
Uh-huh.
But just because I haven't come across it, Jeff, doesn't mean to say that other people who have studied this subject most definitely say that there are people who seem to be terribly confused and they need help. I think that's always a question of helping them. But mm-hmm. Luckily, I've never come across that.
Well, there is a lot of talk about people being helped greatly over there.
So they'll need help. They've probably gone over and refused the help they're getting from the etheric world. So they're sticking,
because they don't want to leave.
Yeah, they're sticking to their earthly familiarities, let's put it that way.
Sure.
And they call them earthbound, don't they? Only because they don't want to go over there. They're still sticking around their old haunts, that's all.
All right.
Some people don't know they've died because they don't believe anything happens except a complete blackout on this because they've been taught that.
Yeah.
Spirits all say that, and when they do die, they don't accept that they're dead, and they don't realize what happened. This is a problem.
Yeah, and that's also a problem. Yeah.
How do we begin to deal with the idea that, on the other side, the evil that we know full well is on this planet is over there as well? Who's in charge? How does that work out? Do the evil people become sooner or later enlightened? Apparently not necessarily quickly.
What we tell us is that, in fact, people seem to segregate out into their own types, and like attracts like, bad one attracts bad ones, and you don't have the mixture of good and bad we have here, but this is what they tell us.
Yeah, that makes sense to me as well. If you've been absolutely rotten all your life and left a bomb in a crowded pub or something, they go onto a separate wavelength. But they're not condemned forever to eternity of hell, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. If they want to do a U-turn and start to behave themselves, then there's a chance of going up to a higher wavelength.
One would wonder how some of the most, don't want to use the word devout, but intense religious figures, when they matriculate, how they handle it. It's got to be an interesting awakening for them. They're not going to run into necessarily a Buddhist or Hindu or Catholic other world. It's not that way.
Well, if they want to mix with their fellow religionists like they have on Earth, then they can do that in the next world.
Ah.
But I want to mix with philosophers and thinkers and scientists, and that's who I hope I will graduate towards. But there's nothing to stop religious fanatics being religious fanatics in the next world. They can do that if they want to.
I had another person not 2 weeks ago tell me about how his grandmother was very sick and was dying, and said that your grandfather is here. He's right there in the room waiting for me. He's come for me. This happens so many times. You hear these stories literally by the thousands.
Well, we've got the scientific backup to back that up now, which is so exciting. This is what it's all about.
All right. Ron, final comment from you very quickly tonight. We have just a couple of minutes left. I want to thank you for holding forth so very well tonight in the middle of the night over there. You guys got up 3 a.m., and it's been much appreciated. Ron, anything? Final comment from you?
Well, I'd like to see some experiments done. I'd like to suggest some experiments which ought to be done to verify the theories of gravity which have come up from this, because if they could be done, it would help to get the whole thing on the map, so to speak.
Very good. Okay, and Michael, just a minute left.
Well, just to say that don't ever be frightened of dying. It's going to happen to all of us anyway. And I can promise you, from what I have witnessed, it's a tremendous adventure, and just check onto my website, and it's all there for you to check with the references.
You don't have to pay taxes anymore either.
No, you don't. And you don't have to worry about food and drink or anything like that either. You only need that to keep the body going, you see.
Wow. All right. It's an extraordinary theory. It is an extraordinary work that Ron Pearson and Michael Roll have come up with. It does deserve the highest attention. When we do our next program in November, we will have one of the world's great scientists on as well. Michael, he is. Tell us who he is and what he does. So
he's the world's foremost expert on global warming.
It's a name you've seen before.
Qualified physicist. Pardon?
Polarized as well.
Yes, polarized. And also free energy as well he's working on, isn't he, Ron? Yeah.
Dr. Peter Wadhams will join Ron Pearson and Michael Roll early November, and we'll look forward to that. Thank you, Ron, very much. Get some rest. Okay, and Michael, thank you very much for being here again. It's been extraordinary. Thank you. Continued success, and keep me posted.
I sure will.
Okay, Michael Roll. All right, that's our program tonight. We're going to take a little 21-hour break away from the microphone. Be back tomorrow night with one of the nation's great naturopathic physicians. This woman is a genius in terms of herbs and herbal treatments. Vitamins, minerals, you name it. Alternative therapies are her world, and she is a master of it. Dr. Marijah McCain, tomorrow night. So we'll talk then. Have a great day. Take good care.